This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. Got family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got. Wildlife Control Supplies. Proven solutions for wildlife control. Delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're in the ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company. Have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you.
Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it, fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light, sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dead camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter. Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA. Cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got...
Welcome to Trapping Across America. This is your host, Clint Locklear. We're going to be going into two different subjects today. One of them is a thought about you trapping, and then we're going to go into if you're looking at becoming a better trapper or you're looking at a way to become a professional trapper with something that's called 80-20 rule, which we got in depth on the business course. But I want to use this since I did so much research and thinking about it. This would be a great topic for the general podcast tonight on trapping, just because it's so important and it keeps you focused on the right things that you're doing. But the first thing I want to do, guys, is I want to, I got this from a friend of mine from Ohio, and it's called the HAVAC Journal, and it's from somebody that's in the Special Operations Unit. You can pull this up at HAVACjournal.com. It's pretty interesting stuff. It's someone that's been there, done that, you know, has got the SF and, you know, the special operations group types, you know, the experience, the real world, been around. I think he's already retired. And, you know, he's kind of a big name in that community. And I have a feeling a lot of the guys that used to be SF and Ranger Battalion and stuff kind of follow him on this blog. But there was the thing that was that brought to me is a weird title for somebody to talk about trapping. But I want to break this down in a few different ways. An open letter to the future of women in special operations. Now you may be going, what in the world does that have to do with trapping? Well, I think there's a lot of things that if like we kind of twist and turn through this article, it's pretty apical to trapping, you know, and it kind of starts off with, I get a lot of messages a day, people wanting to join the special operations thinking, you know, how to get there, what they need to train for, what's the thing with the women in there. And he, you know, I'm just going to quickly read over some stuff, just kind of let you know the flow of this. And we're going to break this down as I go through. This is, I'm not going to go terribly deep in this, talking about women going to special forces. You know, I've already said what I consider the 7 steps to improving your chances to pursuing a special operations process. What I will add to this for females is that there are women already actively working in the profession in the UK and Canada. So, you know, he's talking kind of to women about the idea of going into special forces operations. I tell you right now, I don't really know one way or the other. I don't care if you've got an innie or an outie when it comes to your sexual makeup there if you do it. To me, I think this is a lot like trapping. If someone wants to take a shot at being a professional trapper, make a living at an ADC business, predator control, or fur trapping, you know, it doesn't matter if you're male or female, really. There may be some things with the females that would be more difficult in this type environment. I don't know. I'd be curious to, I've got a friend that's XSF that I would bring this up to because he's the one that sent this to me. But I'm kind of curious what he thinks about it. But it's, you know, they've already been in this. And so, I mean, there are women that are in this world already to a point. Now, this is where it comes to something that I think is going to be very interesting. Now, keep in mind, tonight's show, I want you to do me a favor. Let's not go to dichotomy really, really quick in your brain. Now, if I'm talking about someone being a professional trapper, like that's more important than someone that's not a professional trapper. Don't do the dichotomy there because I'm not. If someone's making money with trapping or it's just a fun hobby, those two should not be paired against each other either or, like the Democrat, Republican, the KKK and Black Lives Matter, you know, all those type things. It's not, think about things in that way, because if you do, you'll lose focus on what I'm trying to say, and there may be something that we cover that might actually help you somewhere down the road, whether it be in your trapping, your business, your life, dealing with your family, any other pursuit you have. There's something to be said here. Now, the reason I think this is important to me, when we go through here, I want you to think about this in a couple different terms. One, if you're wanting to be in a trapping style business, you know, some of the stuff in here is going to be pretty rough to hear, but I think it's true. If you're wanting to be well known inside the trapping industry, this could be talking to you. If you want to start a trapping business, it could be talking to you. If you want to, you know, be like the biggest, baddest, fire-breathing, you know, fur trapper that there is in the United States of America or the world, this would probably definitely be talking to you. But also, I think it's pretty interesting in the life stories, the way that he says this stuff. If you've got a younger individual, you know, 25 to, you know, 8, you know, I've often thought trapping one is one of the coolest things that a young person can learn about the realities of life. Because no matter how bad you want something, if you don't catch an animal, you can't sell the animals. That's a huge life lesson. The more proficient you are at a skill, and the more understanding of that skill, which is in trapping, the better you'll be rewarded as long as you put in the work. See, this is one of the few things in a young person's life that is not based off socialism. It's not like sports today where everybody gets a trophy. So there's not like 10 trappers in a small town. At the end of every day, they meet up at somebody's garage and they split the fur and everybody makes an equal amount of money. So they, you know, that's their way of getting their little trophy for participation. It's not like that inside of trapping. It also shows that you have to watch a younger person, that you have to manage your money. You have to manage your time. You know, if you spend too much on equipment, you don't make enough on the fur. And if that's your goal, you're going to see that that don't always just work out. More is not better when it comes to equipment if you don't have the experience or the ideas behind it to make it proficient yet. So that's a great lesson in of itself. The other thing is, just because you work hard and you don't know what you're doing as well as you will later in life, you're not going to get the same rewards as someone that knows something better, or either has a harder work ethic with the experience or something like that. So to me, that's the reason I think trapping is such a cool thing for young people. And if they learn a particular skill, like how to catch raccoons in a good raccoon market or something like that, or they go look and, you know, I don't know what minimum wage now is, like $7.25, $8.25, something like that. And they go to get a job because they're trying to get to go to college, they want a new car or whatever. You know, it's a great opportunity as a parent or a mentor of a person like that to break that down and go, well, if you could catch 40 raccoons and they're supposed to bring $15 a piece after you put them up, you know, in a 40-hour work week, you should be able to easily catch more than that. And you can make more money doing this than going to get a job and just being a cog in a wheel somewhere. You know, so it could teach some entrepreneurship and some responsibility. And it's really going to be a responsibility when they have to go out and start doing this. So that, to me, besides the being out in the nature and understanding the animals and stuff, I just think trapping is a tremendous asset for young people to learn about the real world and not the garbage world they're being taught in school or that they see on TV, but the harsh reality of the real world. Because sometimes you know the right stuff, you do the right stuff, the market comes out from under you and all of a sudden you're struggling. That's just the real world. You know, there's no one to be mad at. There's no one to go sue. There's no one to get on Facebook and point fingers at. It's just the way that it is, which is real life. And I think that's a cool way to teach it. So kind of take some of the stuff we're gonna read about into that. But no matter where you're thinking about, you know, you're at in trapping, like I said, if you're trying to get in the trapping business, this is very interesting to me in that aspect. If you want to be a well-known trapper because you have lures or DVDs or tools or something you want to make, I think this is very advantageous for someone to really take to heart so they don't get hurt feelings or, you know, case of the red butt somewhere down the road because people aren't, you know, bowing down to them like I see a lot of time at trapping conventions. People just think they actually had a good year or they call it something, they've been trapping so long, so they should have whatever respect they think's due to them, whatever that means to them. So this is very applicable to that. And it's also applicable to somebody that's, you know, thinking about starting their own business or running their own business or, you know, going out, not even in trapping, with deer hunting and fishing, turkey hunting, stuff like that. So I think it's pretty neat. Now, he goes into what he's calling equality. And this is very interesting. This is also just in life in general. Equality is an ever-increasing misunderstood concept. I have long held the belief that if you have to scream that you're in charge, you really aren't in charge at all. So same goes for equality. If you have to scream about how equal you are, guess what? You're failing to prove anything. I never once saw a fellow ranger get respect by demanding it. If you want anyone to know you're equal, shut up about equal and work. Women who have had success before you, paving the way in certain positions, have done just that. They've done the work. The ones who have made it the most difficult for you now are the ones who have attempted to shout their way into a position of respect. Now see, this is very clear to me when I see a lot of the behind the scenes and the hurt feelings inside the trapping industry with people. You know, like I said, they have a really hard season and they start beating their chest about it. Or they have a good season, they start beating their chest about it. Or they go to a convention, all of a sudden they just think people are supposed to just, you know, ooh and ah and beg them to do demos and all this kind of crazy stuff. You know, if you have to prove you're equal to somebody that's doing something like that, you're not really. In your mind you may be, but the people around you have not bought into that yet. So the only thing you can do, guys, is go to work. Instead of getting your hurt feelings and red butt about stuff, you go to work. Because if you have to scream that you're in charge, or you have to scream how equal you are to somebody else, that means you haven't had to prove it to anybody else. And, you know, I can tell you from the military and from being around certain business owners and even some of the guys I've done predator control work for, these guys don't have to tell anybody they're in charge. You know they're in charge, not because they write the paycheck, but because they've been there and done that. You know, it's you can just tell, and it's not from a, I'm being lazy and I want you to go do this. This is the mission. This is what we need to do. We're gonna break off. We're gonna do this. We'll meet back in the middle. Mission complete. And you kind of know that, but there's always, and you could see this really, really blatant when I was in the Army. You may have somebody that was been in your platoon that was saying E4 and E5, and then they get a promotion to E6, but everybody knows them to be kind of a dirtbag and lazy and always trying to get out of stuff. And just because they got that position, no one took them seriously, no matter what the rule said about that. The same thing when you have a little shiny butter bar lieutenant come in from college who's never done anything, you know, except play in the paper world of a college somewhere, and he thinks he's in charge. Legally, technically, you have to salute him and this, that, and the other. Nobody takes him serious. Now, when that lieutenant proves that he's a leader, you'll follow him anywhere. But until he proves that, it's not going to happen. So, you know, that's one of the definitely the things. Now, here's another thing that he says, that the other pervasive confusion about regarding equality is the difference between equality of opportunity and the equality of outcome. Let's clear this up. You don't have the right to be a ranger, a SEAL, or a member of the infantry, or anything else. You have an equal right to show up on day one. The cadre, in turn, has a right to fail you. Which, for most of us, the cadre are not professional buttholes like they are when you're going through these courses. So, you just have to kind of understand. But, I mean, you got to pay your dues. But this is where I think, in just general in life today, people are very confused about equality and that being somehow separate from the equality of opportunity and the equality of outcome. So, you know, it's I see it a lot, like with my cat catches. You know, people get upset and very defensive and very aggressive because, you know, like in their world or their sphere, they catch 15 or 20 cats and they're kind of the man, and all of a sudden they go to a convention and they've got somebody sitting there with all these pictures of all these cats behind it. They get very aggressive and very upset. I see this every single year. I don't know why, but it just happens. Now, we both had the same opportunity to do the same things in Texas, to go different places. I chose to go where there's more cats and where there's a better opportunity for me to show up and have better success than somebody that stays, saying, you know, a Midwestern place or something like that, where you don't have the same opportunity, or you're going to have to kill yourself to catch the same amount of number of cats. Now, there's no reason for one to look up or down on the other one at that point. It's just different. But it does seem very interesting to me in the trapping industry, because, and the reason this is important, guys, if you focus on what other people have done and you start focusing on what they did or the trap they used or something like that, or it was unfair or they had a better season or they knew the game warden or whatever it is that you come up with, what you do is you give yourself an excuse not to be the best that you can be or the best that you want to be, because you're going to start making decisions based off of jealousy and you know, think confusing equality and opportunity being different. You know, it's totally up to you, the trapper, to try to figure that out. But you want to always look at it from a distance if you start feeling yourself get upset over something like that. And the reason is, if I'm talking to somebody that has caught 400 cats, and I'm looking at them and I'm like, well, if I lived in Nevada and they had laws where out of state could go to Nevada or something like that, and that's all I'm thinking about, I'm probably going to miss any little bit of tidbit of information that may help me bump up my cat catch, because it's mental. You're focusing on one thing when you should be focusing on the other thing. If you're talking to somebody that is where you're at, instead of trying to bring them down to where you're at to justify where you're at, you know, it's a kind of a waste of time. Try to mentally get to wherever they're at, and you'll see things start changing at that point. Now, any person who has gone through BUDS, RASP, Special Forces selection phase, have seen guys single out and destroyed verbally and physically until they quit or they step up. People in charge of these selections are professional a-holes. They're going to be exceptionally mean to you. It isn't because you're a female, it's because it's their job, and they are actually professionals. If and when you fail, it isn't because they are out to get you, it's because you didn't efficiently show you belonged. Depending on what infraction eliminates you, you will likely receive an opportunity to recycle. Now, the interesting thing about, and I'm not going to read all that, but the interesting thing about the selection phase of these SF groups, 70 to 80% of men fail the first time around. So when I talk about failure is not always a bad thing, think about that. 70 to 80%, 8 out of 10 guys that are in the SF failed the first time around. You wouldn't normally think about, because we think about them and being superheroes. Now, to me, the interesting correlation between that and trapping, if you set a goal to go catch, it doesn't matter what it is, it could be 10 coyotes, 100 coyotes, 500 coyotes, or 1,000 coyotes, and you actually set that goal up, no matter what happens during that season, it's totally on you for the outcome. See, there's no, when you go to some of these things, and what I did in the military is nothing compared to like BUDS or something like that. Nothing like that. But when, you know, you go to air assault school or airborne ranger school, and you're airborne school, and you're seeing guys that are throwing up while you're doing your first, you know, couple days of runs because you just, you know, did PT to your butt's dragging somewhere around your ankles, and they're not prepared to be there at that time. They try to hang in there. They're throwing up in mid-run. Their puke's hitting the guy in the front of them. I mean, you know, it almost breaks out in a fist fight and all kind of nasty stuff. They weren't prepared. Now, does that mean they're not as good as a person or a soldier or whatever at that point? They just weren't prepared for it at that time. And I think there's something to think about that. The younger you are, what seems to be more obvious to me to now when it comes to trapping, you always overestimate what you can do in a year. And you always underestimate what you can do 5 years from now if you're doing the same thing. And a lot of that comes from experience. There's not a better or a worse. All of the kindergarten stuff that we see on social media and forums and stuff like that, where people are just sniping at each other, it's not that one person is better at anything than the other. It could just be they're in a different phase when they are. And the same person that's firing the cannons right now could be the same person 5 years from now, the cannon's firing at him and he's getting mad because no one's really accepting what he's done for whatever reason, and you know, it just kind of recycles and repeats like that. So it doesn't have to be that way. Now, this is one that I find very interesting because I do think this is very pertinent to a professional trapper. Like I've said, this several times in the last couple of years from doing this podcast. I don't recommend anybody today, or even when I was doing it, to try to be a professional trapper the way that I've done it. Because it's such a small sliver that makes it, that actually pulls it off, that it can be very destructive to somebody's psychic about what they think about themselves, and is the actual reward worth all that you have to go through. And you know, and this is saying this about Rangers and stuff, but it's important to discuss the purpose of such professions as Rangers, Navy SEALs, infantry soldiers. These positions are often glorified in the media, and I can tell you, majority of being a professional trapper is not near as glorious as people that aren't professional trappers think it is. It's a lot more monotonous, and it's a lot more labor intensive, and lack of sleep and all that type stuff. It's not near as glorious as they say. Now, say shiny medals, fancy patches, colors of hats, cool tactical gear permeate the imagination of those outside of the communities. It's the same thing. Most professional trappers, if you hear me and say, you know, Jeff Dunlap talk about being professional trapping, we don't have the same starry eye as someone that wants to be there. Because we kind of understand the most realistic thing. For someone to be a SEAL or a Ranger or an SF or something like that, they've dedicated themselves to a certain set of skill set and morals and a code and different things. And they push themselves to meet that, but it's not the glorious part that you see on TV all the time. For one thing, on TV only lasts for a couple hours at a movie. Well, you know, Bud's training, if you can imagine Hell Day, that's an honest to goodness 24 to 25 hours of being pushed like that. I can't even imagine what that must be like, you know, to go through that. But it seems glorious from the outside looking in. And then, you know, when you're thinking about, well, you see somebody at a booth, and I'm going to use me as an example because I don't want to use somebody else, because this show's not meant for anybody else except for me and you. I'm not talking about any particular people here. When he's talking about glorified in the media, shiny medals, fancy patches, colors of hats, cool tactical gear, all that's what you're thinking about. And you go to a trap and, you know, and you see the pictures and the videos and all of that type stuff. That's kind of like this, you know, the shiny medals and the patches. I mean, it really is. If you, I'm very proud of what I've done. I'm not saying that I'm not at all. But from the outside, you're seeing that. You want to have these pictures, so you're making a decision based off of the glorified shiny medals and stuff. So don't do that. You know, you need to have more of a logical reasoning before that. Because, and this is where he says, I'm going to let you in a little trade secret. None of that crap. See, I can't even, just to say without the adjectives, none of that blankety blank matters at all. None of it. Recruitment posters lie to you, television and movies lie to you, and hopefully I know what you're thinking. I'm joining to make a difference. Here's the harsh reality. When you volunteer yourself for these these positions, your function is to kill. Your job, your purpose, at its core, is to bring an unparalleled level of violence at the throat of the enemy. Now, trapping is not that way. I mean, I am not putting correlation between what these guys do and trapping. But from the perception of, a lot of times it does seem that way, and it's not. Being a professional trapper, guys, if you've never got to really sit down and talk to somebody when they're not in, you know, on mode at a convention or something like that, you know, it's just like if you were to get down and talk to someone that was in special forces. It's work. It's practicing skills. It's getting better at stuff. It's a better understanding. A lot of the stuff, because I was going to, before I got out, I was looking at doing the SF, and I took some of the stuff and talked to some of the guys that were in it, And a lot of what they do is book work. You know, they learn different languages. They learn all this type stuff. So it's not just the physical, you know, kicking down doors thing. It's a lot of other stuff that goes into it, which is a lot like trapping in that point to be able to figure that out. Now, there's some studies he talks about females that are twice the rate of men to get injured. You know, I can tell you professional trappers get injured all the time. There ain't no doubt about that. And he basically goes into the differences of men and women talking about the injury. And, you know, if you get injured doing something like that, or you just hit a bad cycle of fur or something like that, there's no one to blame for any of that. That's just the way it is. Like I've said, I've got screwed up elbows. I've got knee problems. You know, I've dislocated joints while I've been trapping. I've been sick. I've been throwing up. I've been doing all that. You know, a lot of the reason you keep pushing is because you put yourself in a position as a professional trapper where you almost have to, you know, so you don't get in trouble. Now, here's where I think it's very interesting, the physical standards. Now, to someone in the military like me, this is very disturbing, but it also could be, I think a lot of times trappers lower their own standards the way the military has lowered standards to meet certain criteria, which is very dangerous. An article published by SpecialForcesRep.com stated standards have been lowered to facilitate the integration of females in the 75th Ranger Regiment. The article states a standard for the, I'm not going to read the abbreviation, the physical fitness test is the into the Ranger Regiment have been locked without any curves in grading in any metrics. Previously, students were expected to score 80% of the test, which is not very bad. Rangers have always had to score 80% on the PT test. The new standards laid out here show the Ranger students only need to score 60% to attend the Ranger assessment program. This suggests PT scores of 80 on each of the three events, which for 17 to 20 year old male, you know, it's adjusted by your age and different things like that. It's 57 push-ups, 66 sit-ups, and run a 2 mile run in 14:24. And this is the way that it's always been. Now, what he's going to tell you is, you know, the standards, if you go and read this thing, has been lowered to allow females to pass these things to get in. But what the females are finding out, just because they can get in the course doesn't mean they pass it when they get in the course, because to finish the course you have to make the 80%, which by that point you're already, you know, burnt and bruised and physically wore out and mentally burnt and everything. So it becomes a lot harder. But the standards, see, the standards of whatever it is you see in your own trapping, it's easy if you're trying to find the equality that's not real, or the recognition that's more fake than anything else. You lower the standards, and this is why you see a lot of guys, that there's a lot of the argument that goes on Facebook and stuff like that, and you always hear the things is, you know, he's pulling stuff out of his freezer, and I've known people to do this, or he's using somebody else's fur. See, that's lowering standards to try to get the recognition. And it's to be honest with you, in a very respectable way to do it. So, you know, so don't lower your own standards to try to get what it is you're wanting to do. If it's a trapping business or trapping recognition to sell products or something like that, because if you lower those standards, you know, it goes down. And it's obvious on Facebook how much this is being done now, that now no one knows who anybody is being honest about anything. You know, and I would like to think, especially inside the trapping, that this would not be such a prominent thing the way it is. You know, so, and the cool thing about being a professional trapper is you can do all the false perceptions you want to do. You can drag all your buddies' fur in the pictures if you want to. You can Photoshop if you know how to do something like that. You can do whatever you want to do. But the just like being in one of these other groups, the bottom line is if you're going to be a professional trapper and you can't make your income from catching animals, no matter how many pictures you've got, the basic definition of a professional trapper to me is someone that's making a living from what they're catching, and they can sustain that without other income coming in from a second job or something like that. Or it could be a seasonal professional trapper, which is, guys, if you ain't figured this out, is about 90% of what people do. And that only makes sense because trapping season's only 5 months. Trying to make 5 months of income and our year's income in 5 months or 4 months is pretty tough, especially with the cycle of the fur going up and down and different things like that. So really, in today's world, pretty much what you're going to say when someone says they're a professional trapper, they're seasonal. You know, they probably do something else in the summer to make ends meet, or they may put up fur for somebody else, or they go to conventions like a lot of us do. You know, we're making all our living inside of the trapping industry, but it's, you know, we're seasonal on the catch part of that. And then you got guys that's done a lot like what I've done with the beaver or the coyotes. They do a lot of the fur in the winter and they do a lot of control in the summer. That's more of the true old-timey professional trappers that people think about in their mind, but that gets, you know, wears someone down over time. And it's not like something you're going to do when you're 60 years old. So, you know, the part-time thing makes a lot of sense. And this just goes into a whole lot of different things that are political that I don't think we need to get into. But to me, it was just a very interesting article that, because, you know, a lot of times what I do, I'll be honest with you, I will look at certain things and try to figure out how's that applicable to trapping or the mindset of trapping or the mindset of business or something like that. And it's just a very neat way to get different lessons and perspectives. And that's the way that I do that, you know, that I'm always looking at different things. So as we're talking about these type things, you know, just keep that in mind. Equality and opportunity of outcome are not the same thing. And everybody's got different things. Like I've had a lot of trips and stuff I thought was gonna work being out of state and it didn't. And then I've been blessed to have a lot of times that have. And then, you know, there's a lot of guys that work, you know, full-time jobs that I guarantee you is just as good of trapper than me, but they've made decisions where they're never going to have the same numbers. And what I'm seeing in trapping is this divide all the time between hobby and pro or seasonal pro and before and after work or where you're at and different things like that. And it's really silly. It really is. And then people get a lot of times people will you know, get upset and drop out of trapping and all kind of different things because they're not getting the recognition that they want. And like I said, if you keep that in mind when you're going about, especially if you're coming into trapping and you're trying to make a name for yourself so you can sell products or get more trapping jobs or whatever the reason is, if you have to tell somebody how good you are, you're probably not near as good as you think you are. You know, it's kind of like the old thing of someone saying they're a woofer. Anybody that calls themselves a woofer, anybody that actually understands what a woofer is going to laugh at them when they turn around. Because nobody calls themselves a woofer. That's something somebody else calls you. And, you know, if you're a really good trapper and you really hustle, you'll get the recognition that you want. But you've got to put the time in and the work over years, not one season or two seasons before that starts happening. And that's just a lesson, I think, as trappers, we've got to figure out. Now, let's change subjects. Okay, the 80-20 rule. This has been around for years. This is not something I've come up with. This is not anything. But, you know, like I said, we were talking about this on the business course, and I was just thinking, maybe this is one of those things that we ought to bring up. Now, again, don't bring dichotomy into this because we are going to talk about money here when it comes to being a seasonal professional trapper or even a hobby trapper, whatever. So don't bring that dichotomy in so it's one or the other, one's above the other, anything like that, because I'm not thinking that way. But the 80-20 rule is used in, I've heard it in fishing, I've heard it in turkey hunting and deer hunting, I've heard a lot in business. You know, I've actually heard one morel mushroom hunter use this phrase before, which I thought was kind of neat. And what it's based on is everybody's got 100% of time and 100% of energy and 100% of things that you do in that time. And it can also, you can also break this down to tactics or strategies or anything else inside of that. So you have 100%. You don't have 90 and you don't have 110. You've got 100. And what in business, the 80-20 rule usually breaks down to, if an outside person goes into a business, like if you were to bring me into most ADC businesses, I guarantee you, if I looked at the books and just looked at the numbers and took all of the emotion out and the ego out of the guy that's running the business, and because it's his baby and he looks at it a certain way, most businesses will fall into the 80-20 rule. It's kind of freaky how this works. 80% of your income will come from 20% of what you're doing, which means 80% of the time you're spending is not being productive the way that you want it to be. Now, it could be busy, and there could be other reasons why you're doing it, you know, that very well could be important, but it's not necessarily the most productive. So the 80-20 rule kind of falls into it like that. So there's two ways to look at this, guys, when it comes to your trapping. And most people, no matter what they're doing, unless they're already following the 80-20 rule and they automatically think about it in their heads when it comes to their trapping, the 80-20 rule will apply almost across the board. And it may be 65 and 40 or whatever, but it's going to be about 80-20 of what you're doing. So that means when you're out on the trap line, unless you're already following this rule and you understand how this keeps you on course, you're probably spending the majority of your time doing things that aren't productive. And then the smaller percentage, which is going to be 20 normally, it's going to be what produces the most productivity. Now, the goal of this, whether it's a strategy or technique or trap location or a set or anything like that, is you get rid of as most as you can of the non-productive 80 and concentrate on that 20. Because there's a lot of businesses, and I'm going to use business for an example here, that spend 80% of their time doing all this stuff. And really, when you break it down, they've only got one or two products or one or two services that make almost all of their income. And the other stuff's just kind of filler here and there. Now, the person is busy. He thinks it's all important. He's being professional. He's doing that. But if you can break down what that 20% is and concentrate on more of that, you can grow the business. Part of the problem that makes it hard for people to grow the business is they're doing 80% on unproductive, and even if they put some extra time into what is productive, they've still burnt all that time and it's not very productive. Now, we're not talking about business, we're talking about trapping. Now, this can be in a lot of different avenues. So what I want you to do when you're thinking about next year on your season, or you're thinking about your sets or your lures or your locations, or could be going out of state, or it could be, you know, all kind of different things. Think about the 80-20 rule. And this is where sometimes having a journal or a notebook or notes becomes very, very important to you. Because while you're in the 100% of doing everything and you're busy doing everything, the 80% of unproductive feels as important as the 20% that's productive. So let's say we're gonna go to the guy that's trying to be a seasonal professional here. If you were to keep records and journals of what you did from the time you got up during trapping season to the time you went to bed, and you broke that down of the sets, the animals, the catches, the time, putting up fur, doing all that type of stuff. And then you broke it down to what the income was that was coming in, you'll probably see some pretty obvious patterns starting to show up. Now, to someone that's trying to make money on trapping, when you talk to most professionals, you'll see that they're not general style trappers, because they figured out what makes them the most money, and that's what they concentrate on. And to someone that's going to do it just for fun, and just, you know, they see a muskrat den, so they go set a muskrat, and they see a coon track, so they go set a coon track, and then they see a high bank trail, and it could be a fox going up down it, so they run back the truck and they get a snare or a foothold in their predator stuff. You know, they're having, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. It's just not very productive. Because at the end of the season, what you're going to see is, if you're trapping muskrats and bobcats and coyotes and otter and beaver and all that at one time, because of the market and because of where you're at and because of your skill level and your experience, what you'll find out, if you were to break down that whole money pile, there's probably going to be one or two of those animals that make you most of the money. But you could have made way more money if you concentrated on those instead of concentrating on the other stuff. Now, if you're doing it just because you want to have a good time trapping, this may not pertain to you at all. But maybe one day you'll need to think about this, so we're bringing this up. So like for me, you know, if I look at the market, like the way the market is right now, even though I'm saying in Iowa, I'm going to have to run the numbers at coon selling at what they're selling at now, and I catch so many a day and it's the best that I've ever done, what is that going to be? Or if I disregard the coon for this year and I'm a reasonable, say, beaver trapper or with caster expensive as that's getting, or a coyote trapper, if I catch less animals, would I make more money doing it that? So what I'm trying to do is focus on where the most productive thing will be. And a lot of times, even guys that want to be professional trappers, the reason they have such a hard time breaking the money barrier of anything is because they're focusing as much time on the 81% as they are the 20 other percent. Like for Red, you know, one of the things I've learned from him when I was out there in Iowa is when he goes after coon, he's only after coon. He doesn't set anything else until the line is totally set up. And then if he has time, so he'll put in some mink or muskrats or something like that. But he's totally focused on that. Now you talk, you know, the guys that are in Maryland and Eastern Pennsylvania, they're totally on red fox if the red fox market is high. They don't set a lot of coon traps and beaver traps and coyote traps and stuff like that. It's totally concentrated on that. They know where their money's coming from, and it could be for a lot of different reasons. There's a bigger population, you know, all these different things. But you've got to focus on what that is. Like I can tell you from running a river line, you know, it depends on what the market is doing is what I'm going to focus on. Some years it's been almost strictly muskrats in a sideline when it's very convenient for beaver or otter. Some years I've been on the river and I've totally disregarded muskrats and I may have concentrated solely on coon and maybe red fox because that's what the market is going to do. But if I would have not followed the 80-20 rule, I'm setting for everything. I may catch twice as much fur, but I'm actually going to make half as much money. And if money is an issue with your trapping, you've got to focus on what that is. Now, let's even break that down even further for the 80-20 rule so that makes totally sense. If you're running a system of trapping, let's say you're going out and you're just going to be strictly a coon trapper because everybody here is going to know how to catch raccoons. There's a lot of ways to catch raccoons. To me, in Iowa, a 220 in a trail is much better than a pocket set. And when I look back at the numbers, the 220s, at that time they were 280s, but the body grips in the trail or snares was definitely the 20% of the most productive. There wasn't as much competition under the bridges. and all this other type stuff. There wasn't a whole lot of guys setting the high bank trails, especially where I was at. So I had that more to myself. And looking back, I should have spent all of my time on the high bank trails and never once set a foothold in the water. I would have caught more coon. I would have made more money. Now, if you're going out and you're going after coon, now think about this in your own type of setting. You can set pockets. You can do portable pockets. You can do boxes. You can do snares and body grips and all that type stuff. And a lot of guys will do those, all those different type things. See, if you keep a journal at the end of the year, see, numbers are very unemotional if you don't try to make them have a story. So when you're looking at your journal, you got to look at it from a third party. And if you look at that and you're kind of, you know, you set about the same of all of them, and you look down through there and the pocket sets caught this many, and the portable pockets caught that many, and the cubbies caught this many, and the boxes caught that many, and this, that, and the other, you will see down through there that one or two of those is going to be where the majority of your coon was caught. So the 80-20 rule says you concentrate on those two, disregard the 80% that's not as effective. The same thing with locations: high bank trail, culverts, bridges, wood lines, farmland, big water, rivers, canoe lines, all that type stuff. If you can keep a record for a while, you will see that you may catch more on a river line than you do on a road line. Then why are you wasting time on the road line when you could do more on the river line? It makes sense when someone says it this way, but when someone's in the heat of the moment of a trap line, you see a good bank to put in a pocket, you grab the shovel, you go start digging. If you see a high bank, you put something in the trail, you know, whether it be a snare or a body grip or a blind set or something like that. And then you don't really know what is working the most. And like with coyotes and bobcats, it can be the same way. It's very unsexy when someone goes with me when I'm bobcat trapping. I'm only doing two things, guys, when I'm in Texas. Two things. I'm putting fence snares in fences, and I'm doing the shoot cubby slash whatever you want to call the system I've got for bobcats. That is it. Because over all the years of doing the open dirt holes and the walkthroughs and the exposed traps and this and that and the other, those two with the 80-20 rule have narrowed it down to the point where I only use those two things. Now, if I'm trapping in Tennessee or Kentucky or Missouri or somewhere like that, the only two things I do for cats is that, is snares in the high bank trails along creeks and rivers, and the cat set that I use. That's it. I don't do a whole lot of experimenting and stuff. I've already went through that phase. I've already got the 80-20 down. So I know that my highest percentage is to do that type of thing. Another thing when it comes to the 80-20 rule with your trapping is your locations. You know, with coons, you got water, you got high bank, you got the cove, the bridge, or stuff like that. Well, when it comes to cat trapping, when we say we're setting out cat traps, what does that mean? Well, I can tell you to me, I'm very specific on where I put my cat traps now. I used to put a bunch more out at the kind of the shotgun hope and pray approach, and I would catch some at those, but a majority would be at a certain thing. In the eastern part of the country, or even in the western part of the country, if you've got water and you got choke trees, where we have where the people don't actually hear anyway, plow right up next to the water, and we got wood lines and it's really thick, stuff like that, that's where the cats around here are more than not. Now, looking at my back door, I've got the perfect thing, and anybody that's been here has seen this going up and down my valley, and it's brought up, and I get tickled, it's brought up by every single trapper. We live in a very unique geographical area in Squatchy Valley, where we have two plateaus on both sides of us and Africa is the only two places in the world that has this. Those two plateaus are flat on top. They're not mountains like in West Virginia. When you get on top, it kind of rolls a little bit, but it's pretty flat. You're in the bottom, it's flat. The only steep part is on the sides from the valley to the plateau. But for 70-something miles from where this plateau starts till it finishes in the Tennessee River, we have a rock line that looks just like Slim Peterson talks about out in the west. You've got big trees, big woods, you know, all that type of stuff. You can see it going all up and down the valley. And anybody that's a trapper and ever thought about cats, they start slobbering looking at that thing. Now, I can tell you in my area, by doing that, that's not a very productive set. There's a couple reasons for that. There's nothing going on close to there except the older woods because it's so hard to get to. So there's no feed there. It's open hardwoods or pines. So there's not squirrels and mice and stuff like that the way it is when you get in the thicker areas. So in my environment, that's not a very good location. I have spent a lot of time figuring out how's ways to get down there. And a lot of it is wasting so much time because there's no good access. How to do that? There's a few roads that go up the side, and I got permission, and I would walk out there and I put these traps in the way you'd see it out west. And did I catch some cats? Yes. But to set 15 of those sets out in a day would be all day long because you almost need a helicopter and rappelling rope to get to them. There's no access to them. And the trails that are up next to them are really not that strong. And as far as finding the cat sign and the cat toilets, it's just not there. So it's different. So that's not the 20% that works where I'm at. I've learned that if I get next to the creeks that are at least 15, 20 feet across, it's thick, there's high bank trails, that's where the cats are going to be. That's where I focus. Now, when I get into more open cropland, the thicker the area is better, and I'm still trying to key off that water because for some reason in the east, bobcats do. Now, going out to every road intersection on a property and setting up cat sets is in that 80% of the unproductive. You will catch some cats, but it's not the most productive. What is productive around here in the mountains is when you find the gaps between the longer ridges that are lower or the places inside a civilization, which I've got some video on YouTube you can go watch, where you've got everything stacked around it and you've got, you know, 500, 600, 700 yards of wood line going from ridge to ridge. I key on those. That's the 20% of the most productive because that's the way that a cat's going to move through an area without being in everybody's backyard, people shooting at them with pellet guns. So they've learned that. So that's where the cats are at, that 80-20%. So it's not that exciting to go cat trapping with me as far as locations and the sets I'm using because I'm only doing the 20%. But that 20% allows me to set more of those sets on more of those locations to be more productive than someone that's burning 80% scattering it everywhere the way that I used to do it. You know, same thing with beaver trapping. You've got certain sets that will outproduce day in and day out other sets. And, you know, certain type of traps, whether it be body grips or snares or footholds or whatever it is, with your skill set in your area with your animal populations, if you keep a journal, you'll find out there's 20% that really rock and roll and 80% is just kind of blah. Well, stay away from the blah. And you'll be way better off when it comes to your own trapping. So take this 80-20% rule and mix that inside of your trapping in any way you can. It can also be with equipment, guys. If you have pullouts on stuff, you know, start thinking about that in the 80-20 rule. If you have traps that seem to freeze down quicker, or different things like that, or the way you're handling the winter weather or something like that, break everything down in the 80-20 rule. And when you do that, now all of a sudden, I mean, trapping's a whole lot easier because you're focusing on what you need to focus it on. You know, coyote trappers, you know, you have guys that are really good at dirt holes and that's all they do. They don't mess with flat sets. And then you got guys that are really good at flat sets and that's all they do and they won't put in a dirt hole. And I've been around guys that are tremendous blind set trappers. And then I've been around guys that set traps in the back and on the side and let the ground kind of tell them what to do, which is kind of what I do. But I've learned for me in my areas where I've been, most of the time, that's the 20% for me. The guys that do the dirt hole, not because they think it's the best set and that's the reason they're doing it. It's the most productive for them. But the dangerous part for a new trapper or someone that's just been in it for 5 or 6 years is they go out and they put in dirt holes and flat sets and blind sets, and they have all these different type of sets out there on all these different type of locations, and they're not really picking the cherry picking what's working the best so they can concentrate on that, and their numbers stay in a lower bracket because of that 80%'s eating up all their time and their energy. So, you know, keep that in mind. It can be on equipment. It can be on your locations. It can be on your sets. It can be on, like for me, I can tell you that if I'm out of state somewhere, if I'm going out of state and it's going to be for cats, I try to show up so I've got like 3 days before the full moon. That's the most productive time of the month for cats, for me. Over different states and different years, that's it. Now, if I'm going for a predator job and it's coyotes, I want to be there about 3 days before it's the darkest part of the month. Why? Because that's the most, in my style of way of doing it, the way things work out, that is telling me that's the 20% of the most fur that's going to be caught that month. The biggest group is going to come off that area. So when this showing up and doing it haphazard, I'm kind of planning for that 80-20%, which is like that. You know, one thing I do a lot, you know, the moon definitely plays a bigger part in things than people realize, because we're so artificial in the way that we think about things now because of the bubbles we all live in. You know, like when my wife wants to go to Florida, I've learned to do the same thing. I do not want to be down there, and I've done it a couple of times because I wasn't paying attention. I do shark fishing off of the shore at night. I catch a shark near about every night. It's in the freezer. We eat on that for a long time. Sharks are really good if you've never ate it. But at the end of the months, if you look at the tides, they're always like these 3 or 4 days where there's almost no tide whatsoever. And there's no waves whatsoever. And it's just, it's kind of freaky and eerie out there because the Gulf will be like a pond. And when I'm down there and it's going to be, you know, more drastic and you got bigger tides coming in and out, the fishing's better. And on these other tides, it's not. So I've learned, even in fishing, which is just purely a hobby, when I go down there, the 80-20 rule says stay away from those other things. I've focused in on that because I've seen that. Now, if I just went down there haphazard, never thought about it, or thought about when do I catch more sharks than not, I wouldn't know one difference to the other, and half the time would be at the end of these months and stuff like that where it wouldn't be that productive. You know, there's some really weird stuff that goes on, and if you don't keep a journal, how in the world are you going to know about it? You know, thinking about when you're taking your time off. If you're going to try to catch a lot of coyotes, guys, you need to be trapping, depending on where you're at in the country, somewhere between October and Thanksgiving. That's your money time to catch coyotes. When they start going into breeding season and they start getting where they don't pay attention to sets very well, and that's when you're going to take vacation, you're going in the most 80% of the time, because the 20% where you're going to catch the most fur is, you know, depending on where you're at, if you're really far out west and you've got elevation, probably October, even some of y'all September. And then, you know, when it starts getting really bad weather and it starts getting into December, it's okay, get into January. Everybody falls apart for 2 or 3 weeks in January, sometimes going into February. Catches go way down, this, that, and the other. If you planned your vacation that way, dude, I mean, think about what you're doing to yourself right there. But you, and this is where it's coming into breaking it down to the 80-20 rule. When's the best time to go? What's the most productive? What's the most non-productive? What's the best trap sets? What's the most unproductive trap sets that I do? Get rid of them. And then, see, because here's the cool part about the 80-20 rule. When you get rid of the 80%, you're going to have a lot more time to focus on the 20%. And then you can start this repeating cycle over and over again. This is why guys that are really good at trapping, catching numbers all the time, this is what they're doing. They're taking the most productive, and then they experiment. And then they figure out if that's in the 80 or the 20. Now, see, eventually they find more things that's in the 20 than maybe just one or two. Now they're really, you know, way ahead of their peers in their skill level of trapping, because they know it's the most productive, and now they're only testing one or two things, whether it be lure, bait, set, location, whatever. And then they can add that to the arsenal of the 20, and if it's not, they cut it. They know it's in the 80%, and then they're building up their experience and their everything that goes along with it. And all of a sudden, they seem like they're a much better trapper than they are. Because when you hear people say, "I'm as good a trapper as they are," they could be. You know, mentally, you know, the book knowledge, all this other type of stuff, they very well could be. Or if I was in that area, I could catch just as many. Well, you could be, but you're not for some reason. And most of the time, when I really get to talk to people, when I was doing the personal instruction, when I had time to do that, what it broke down to is the 80-20 rule was not followed. But if you can get that person to slide over to that 20% and focus 100% of their time on the 20% that's the most productive, yeah, they can hang with anybody in the country as long as they have the work ethic, you know, to back that up. So whether someone's as good at something or not, a lot of time falls in more in trapping with the management of the trap line, not necessarily the skill of setting a trap. You know, there's a lot of different aspects that go into that as far as, you know, how you run your line and when you pick to run your line and all that other type stuff. All that builds on that success, and the success shows to be more and more when it's really not skill level of actually setting the trap. It's the line management and time management of running that line. So when you're thinking about the season coming up, you could be, for some of y'all, I'm still probably doing some spring beaver work for the high caster prices, different things like that. When you're thinking about your trap line, guys, always think about the 80-20 rule. That should come ahead of prices, of what you want to buy, where you want to go, everything. The 80-20 rule will keep you on the path to success and keep you off the 80% of the unproductive. And when you do that, trapping gets really cool because it gets a whole lot easier. And the fur all of a sudden is a lot easier to catch quicker, because you're being productive. Now, just like last week, guys, if you hadn't failed at anything this week, that means you hadn't done anything this week. So go out and do something.
Vessel and tank carriage guns to hunt the world's oceans and seas. Born to go into harm's way, come all ye other high waters be damned. No lightning, no thunder, nor hurricane hail can stand in the face of his wrath. Be beneath his enemy's feet, or by power the gates cannot grow. The life that rise, every last man shall shake to the core of his soul.
come to me. From my yin to my yang to my yang to see. Put a grin on my chin, come to me. Cause I'll win, I'm one of a kind. And I'll bring death to the place you're about to be. Another river of blood.